The circuit-riding preacher used to ride across the land with a rifle on his saddle and a Bible in his hand. He told the prairie people all about the promised land as he went riding, singing down the trail.
I am back in El Salvador, and as excited as I was to get off of my little Chinese motorcycle to get to the USA and back on my 100-horsepower Kawasaki, I was exactly that glad to get back on my lightweight machine. During these years, I've flown many places, but there was a flood of emotion when I took off out of Tulsa, Oklahoma, and flew over my own lands, my own territories, my own stomping grounds. I'm accustomed to looking out the airplane window to try to figure out where I'm at and what the land is like in a strange and foreign place, but it was a beautiful thing to fly past Oral Roberts' city of faith that he built, out over innumerable hay fields and cattle pastures, over I-40 and Tiger Mountain Road, over Great Lake Eufaula, where there's rumored to be a Nessie, something I know more about than I really should. Over the Arbuckle Mountains, where Robbers Cave is found, the famous hideout of Jesse James and Calamity Jane, over that ribbon of the Red River into Texas. Over the Paris peach orchards. I sold my shotgun for the outbound flight. Such is the life of a nomad and gunfighter. This is the Living by the Sword Show with Pastor Sam and the Gospel Gunslingers. Thank you for joining us. We got news to cover and a Bible lesson or two mixed in with all my sappy emotions, beginning with Asia's heat of the moment.
Yeah.
Sadly, my Kawasaki, my only working American vehicle, blew craps in Tulsa, Oklahoma. It probably needs a head job. That's alright, I've wanted to deck it and put in a jet kit forever. And retire it to an American city where it can do what it was designed for, to be a little commuter. Zip around the loops and beltways and never leave town, never go out on rainy days. She is a classic and quite irreplaceable. So I got to spend about 10 days in Tulsa. I got a lot of things together. It's a city where I have a lot of friends and am able to get a lot of things done. I have enemies there too. I think I said last week that I faced them all. Like every Trump supporter, J6er, and exiled political dissident, I was not at all sure I'd ever see my mama again in person. Fortunately, we had a lot of time to hang out and knock out some objectives and pray together, and she asked a lot of really smart questions. She's one of the smartest people that I know, and I'm going to share some of those with you tonight. Starting with this, speaking of El Salvador, where I have a lot of loose ends, and this is not the only nation. Now that my credentials are restored, that I have a U.S. passport, that I feel like the U.S. government supports me and my rights as a citizen of our great republic, I could go minister in Argentina, in Ecuador, who knows? I've got loose ends in Panama and people halfway discipled. But I was telling Mom that I have to go deeper in the jungles of El Salvador than I have heretofore. I have to go out there for my cigar business. And for evangelism and for other purposes, I have to root out wickedness and penetrate the darkest places in this nation. So Mom asked me, are there vipers out there? Yup, I replied. You see, my response was anticlimactic, but firm and affirmative. I guess it came up because my neighbor at the gun show had referred to the 27th chapter of Acts. This is a smart investment advisor and young believer and father. And amongst all the calamities suffered by the apostle in the 27th chapter of Acts, one of my favorite chapters in the Bible, which contains over 30 nautical terms that occur nowhere else in the scripture. I'll read this to you. It's actually in chapter 28 after the shipwreck. Verse 3, and when Paul had gathered a bundle of sticks and laid them on the fire, there came a viper out of the heat and fastened on his hand. And when the barbarians saw the venomous beast hang on his hand, they said among themselves, no doubt this man is a murderer whom, though he hath escaped the sea, yet vengeance suffereth not to live. Isn't it funny? The superstitious sailors start talking about karma. Verse 5, and he shook off the beast into the fire and felt no harm. Howbeit they looked when he should have swollen or fallen down dead suddenly, but after they had looked a great while and saw no harm come to him, they changed their minds and said that he was a god. After this, a miracle is worked by the hand of Paul, by which, basically, the king of Malta, the chief man of the island, the head of this small republic, much like El Salvador today, was brought into the faith. So Mom was a little concerned that I'd be going out in the jungle with those vipers, to include the Fer de Lance. As if I hadn't had enough snake problems in the USA. I've run into rattlesnakes multiple times.
I've run into those in Mexico, too, and it doesn't really sound like a rattle, it's more of a buzz.
It's kind of like that. If you're tromping through the pasture or through the desert at night and you hear that buzz go off, you better jump high in the air. What I do is I jump instantly as high as I can, and then I decide whether to move right or left at the apex of my trajectory.
I'll let you decide for yourself whether that's a joke or not.
Just know that I've survived unscathed multiple close calls with rattlers using this very technique. I've run into copperheads, a crotalid, which is not as dangerous as some others, but it's no slouch. I attended and ministered at the 2007 Rainbow National Gathering in Arkansas, where there were multiple copperhead bites treated. These are the disadvantages to the barefoot hippie lifestyle. One summer alone, I killed two massive cottonmouth snakes. Both of them were over 4 feet long, and one of them was as thick as my wrist. Bear in mind, I faced all of these without my .45 automatic. This was before the days of me running .460 Roland. Either of those pistols will accept, and I highly recommend, CCI brand snake shot shells. Number 12 shot, and it will knock a snake so dead so fast, it's unbelievable. I've also torn apart a lot of snakes with regular bullets, but the CCI shot shell just smacks them down instantaneously.
instantaneously. It's unreal.
I recommend carrying that as your chambered round in snake country, but I faced all of these snakes and killed them without any modern weapon at all. That biggest cottonmouth, I told Dr. D, it's over there. It's pinned with a big rock. It's dead. Go check on it in the morning. He went over there and with a stick, pulled the fang out, and the venom just squirted. It was a satanic attack to get us. But thanks be to God, we overcame. So of the four main species of venomous serpents in the continental United States, the only one that I have not personally had close run-ins with is the coral snake, the only one that's not a crotalid. It carries a powerful nerve venom, and once again, it's no slouch. So if you see the red band and the yellow band touching one another, the old Boy Scout rhyme comes into play. Red next to yellow will kill a fellow. Of course, the nearly identical king snake has the same colors, just ordered differently. If the red is next to the yellow, stay away. It's a dangerous, neurotoxic coral snake.
And I'm always on the lookout for them, although I've never had a close brush with one yet. So when Mom asked about the vipers, she was a little concerned that I'd be running into them in the jungle, and I downplayed the matter in my answer so that she would not be so concerned, but I have a lot more to say about it. When we come back, let's go out to a little more Asia, and the theme of Asia in these tunes tonight is the ladies that let opportunities pass them by. Ladies, y'all are the ones whose biological clock is tick, 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 ticking. American women are accustomed to spending the first third of their fertile years as second advanced adolescence. So often the second third is spent in finding oneself, exploring options and opportunities. If she's not careful, a girl then finds herself in her third and final segment of her fertile life, that of the geriatric pregnancy.
No way. You've gone.
the Oklahoma thunder showers were coming through and wave after wave spinning up tornadoes and dropping hailstones. Clomp, clomp, clomp.
Mom asked me, "Does it rain like this in El Salvador?" I replied,
"Not like this. The storms there have their own terrifying power coming right off the Pacific."
But of course, I'll add to that now that the dragons of the Pacific love Uncle Sam.
I mean, it's no different than the wolf packs of the North Woods.
They know who is a friend of God. They know who is able to speak peace to their lands.
Seriously, what do you think those creatures are waiting for? Those, even the powerful ones that control the weather, barring energy weapons,
they have an earnest expectation. It's right here in Romans 8 and 19. "For the earnest expectation of the creature waiteth for the manifestation of the sons of God."
They know everything is screwed up because the first man sinned and death entered into the world and corruption, and the earth was cursed with a curse.
Verse 21, "But the creature, because the creature itself also shall be delivered from the bondage of corruption into the glorious liberty of the children of God. For we know that the whole creation groaneth and travaileth in pain together until now."
Go and read about our heirship. Go and read about the glorious liberty. Read about the spirit of adoption. It's all right here in Romans 8.
I just set my Bible face down on my sack of potato chips.
It takes a lot of cups of coffee and a lot of snacks to bring these broadcasts to you late at night.
Perhaps you can hear the rolling thunder of a storm coming off the Pacific now.
Maybe tomorrow I'll go surf the remnants of it and we'll see it, like I don't have enough to do.
So back to the vipers in the jungle. Yeah, there's vipers up there. We know there's vipers in the jungle. Just like there are sharks in the sea, there are snakes in the jungle, just like there were snakes in Pharaoh's throne room where the Lord sent his prophets.
And what did the Lord's prophet do? He took his own snake with him up into that scenario, up into that showdown, and in the end it was his snake that was bigger and it ate up the rods of the Magi.
The first time this happened was at the burning bush, where the Lord said to Moses, "What is that in thine hand?"
A rod, said Moses, slow of speech. "Throw it down," the Lord said, and it became a serpent, and Moses fled from its presence. Then the Lord said, "Take it by the tail," and he took it by the tail and it became a rod again in his hand. Moses met Aaron by divine appointment in the wilderness and showed the miracle to him. The third time, Aaron functioned as the prophet and took the rod of God and threw it down before the elders of Israel, and it transmogrified again into a serpent. All three times into a rather typical, frightful Asiatic viper, probably a lot bigger than the Fer de Lance.
But described as the Nakash, it was a beast known to nature, to biology and science.
But when Pharaoh decided that he would oppress and victimize the children of Israel, Pharaoh's being twice described in the Bible as Tanin, directly
in that showdown, the rod of God transmogrified not into a Nakash, but into a Tanin, into a mighty dragon.
The word means nothing else and occurs three times here in Exodus 7.
In the King James, these are incorrectly rendered as serpents, but I'll read them to you. This is 7:9. "When Pharaoh shall speak unto you, saying, Show a miracle for you, then thou shalt say unto Aaron, Take thy rod and cast it before Pharaoh, and it shall become a serpent." That is Tanin. That is dragon.
The second occurrence is in verse 12. I'll read that to you. I'll read 11 first. "Then Pharaoh also called the wise men and the sorcerers, now the magicians of Egypt. They also did in like manner with their enchantments, for they cast down every man his rod, and they became serpents." That is Tanin, that is dragons. "They became serpents, but Aaron's rod swallowed up their rods."
The third occurrence is in verse 15, and this is where the dragon is used as a weapon to cause widespread destruction for the first time. I'll read it to you. "Get thee unto Pharaoh in the morning. Lo, he goeth out unto the water, and thou shalt stand by the river's brink against he come, and the rod which was turned into a serpent," that is Tanin, that is a dragon, "turned to a serpent, shalt thou take in thine hand." Verse 20, "And Moses and Aaron did so as the Lord commanded, and he lifted up the rod and smote the waters that were in the river in the sight of Pharaoh and in the sight of his servants, and all the waters that were in the river were turned to blood."
If you have followed the Gospel Gunslingers for any length of time, I think you know that as my predecessor and forebear, William Branham, taught, intended to teach, tried to teach, did his best to teach, laid the foundational teachings, although many of them were not heard, about angelology and the working of miracles in conjunction with the presence of the holy angels. As he did that, it has fallen to me to teach proper biblical dragonology. What the Tannen are, where they come from. I have authored the original exhaustive study on all 28 Hebrew Bible occurrences of this word. It's on the face of GospelGunslingers.com. It is called the Dragonlancer series. People of God, you are missing half the equation if you only understand that the angel was assigned to Moses. He was given two weapons, the angel and the dragon, which had its residence in the rod of God, which was laid up by the ephod in the tabernacle and later the temple. This is Aaron's rod that later budded when his leadership was challenged, when the gainsayers and the self-righteous rose up against him. So my further answer to my mama and the world about the vipers of the jungle, yes, there are vipers in the jungle, but mine's bigger. As my German landlord might have said, there are Schlange, Schlange. The snake is long. Why do you think the people listened to the prophet Jonah? Someone was talking, and they were in Israel, and they were talking about the prophet Jonah. They said something critical, something disparaging, perhaps about when Jonah was wroth. To which the Hebrew replied, "We love the prophet Jonah. The prophet Jonah is the only one that the people listened to and repented. All the other prophets, their words were not heard." But why did the people listen to the prophet Jonah? Why was his walk different? Because of the sign of the prophet Jonas. Because he appeared in the presence of a mighty dragon. And the Ninevites were fish worshippers, something that continues today in Romanism. The papal hats and the hats of bishops are made to look like a fish mouth. This is Dagon worship, the fish god of the Bible, which was humiliated in the book of Judges, and his head and hands broken off of his idol. I already made a brief foray into the jungle to see Logan's girlfriend, Leonor, Princessa Leonor, Logan's lady. I was speaking with the Pentecostal suegra of my assistant gunner, and I said, make sure and take good care of Leonor. Make sure she gets plenty to eat and is strong, because I'm going to breed her on her first heat. Now, American breeders look down on this, and with reason. And La Suegra was actually appalled. She says, oh, you should not breed the first heat. This in a jungle town that's absolutely chock full of mean, mangy stray dogs.
When she said that, I motioned in a circle, and I said, really, do you think any bitch in this town was not hit on her first heat?
The answer, of course, was such an obvious and resounding negativo that it didn't even need to be spoken.
The fact is, Leonor is strong, she's doing well, she's recovering from the illness of her youth, her nose is getting so long, she really looks like the German Shepherd type. She's only 14 weeks old right now, but oh, she is muy guapa, she's very hermosa, she's a lovely little lady.
Ah, can you hear the dragon's roar? Do you think the Lord would send out his prophet under-equipped? There is, in fact, a reason why we run 460 Roland Magnum pistols and why we go into battle with a bigger beast,
with a dragon mightier than all those of the Magi.
Let's go into our break with a romantic Asia tune for the Peli Roja. This is Wishing.
Can I keep going till I know you're with me? wanted, young, skinny, wiry fellows, not over 18, must be expert horsemen willing to risk death daily, orphans preferred. That was the text of the old Pony Express ad, pasted to signposts in St. Joseph, Missouri. Such were the pioneers that made our nation great, from sea to shining sea. Today, also, God is looking for a few good men. He's looking for a few pistol-packing mamas. And I invite you to be among that number, to support your local gunfighter, to help us to broadcast. I want to be your pastor, and I want to be your missionary. Send me a prayer request. Send me a letter. Send me a dollar. You can also do it online at gospelgunslingers.com. Tell me your thoughts that you would like broadcast on the airwaves all the way to Antarctica. My mailing address is Pastor Sam Honnold, H-O-N-N-O-L-D, 7107 South Yale Avenue, number 434, Tulsa, Oklahoma, 74136, USA. Let's be brothers in arms. I covet your friendship. Let's be fellow soldiers struggling for our free hemisphere. I cannot be out here on the cutting edge without you. I'm a refugee. I have left all. I am on the front lines, and like the United States military, for every soldier out shooting his gun, even a soldier who's not elite, even a soldier who's not on the cutting edge, have 17 soldiers behind him, cooking, loading trucks, driving trucks, flying planes, fueling vehicles. The apostle writes of the support structure in the Lord's army when he says, "Who goeth a warfare any time at his own charges," in 1 Corinthians 9:7. The apostle is stating that the soldier on the front lines needs his brothers and sisters behind him. Would you do that for your brother Sam? Would you help me to stay on the air? Would you write out an envelope, write me a note, put in a few colones or quetzales, some Mexican or Argentine pesos or any of the pesos of the world, or send me some American dollars while they're still worth something? Someday, very soon, they won't be. But above all, I want your inscription. I want your enlistment. I want you to take up the sword. Take up the sword of the Spirit, which is the Word of God, and take up the sword. Uncle Sam and the Gospel Gunslingers want you. Orphans Preferred.
Welcome back to the Living by the Sword Show, broadcasting from Surf City, La Libertad, El Salvador, on WBCQ 7.490 MHz and WRMI 9.955 MHz. I sold my shotgun to pay for my outbound flight from Houston to El Salvador. One of the things we do at gun shows is we show cool guns and people bring out historic. There the storm is a little close. People bring out historic relics. I got to show also the Green Beret's personal 6-inch long slide 1911 pistol in 460 Roland. I'll make sure and tweet that out. I got a great pic of it, and it can still be had for $3,900. Just go to 460roland.com and send a message if you'd like that one-of-a-kind pistol.
I also decided to show my shotgun. I've had a lot of fun with that, been on a turkey hunt with it, a number of turkey hunts actually, which was really what I bought it for in addition to self-defense. I put together all the nickels and dimes that I paid for it, including tacks and sling swivels and the non-slip sling that I put on it, combat web sling. After adding all that up, I just doubled it and put that right on the price tag. When I got walked up and peeled out the cash and offered half again what I paid for everything put together, including the tax, I let him have it. I needed an air ticket from Houston to El Salvador. Plus, I already dug up my cache of other self-defense pistols, including my 460 Roland. The tactical boys say the purpose of a handgun is to fight your way, to use it in an emergency to fight your way to a rifle. Well, we say the purpose of a rifle is to use in an emergency to fight your way to your 460 Roland. In that respect, my shotgun had already done its duty because I had my holstered 460. If you come see me at a gun show, you may just wrap your own fingers around a 460 and Roland and decide that you really don't want to shoot anything else. I did. I also went out to the firing range. I took that pretty girl out on the town. You see, the Green Beret had passed me, slid me a box full of shells.
Said, go shoot those, see what you think.
That was something I was more than happy to do. I needed the practice, and those full-power shells and new Starline brass are more than $1.50 each. So I took them out to the range and clicked them off, and it just reminded me every time I go out and pull out that 460 at the firing range, I'm reminded of this scene from RoboCop, because this is exactly what happens. So I'm going to play it for you. Here the police recruits are all on the firing line, clicking away, bang, bang, bang. The camera pans across the shooting station, stopping on Nancy Allen's lady cop character. The target nears her station, and she fires her last few shots through the paper. But then she hears a noise, down all the way at the end stall on the firing range. Sticking out past the firing line on that number one stall is a gun like no other, RoboCop's super pistol, thundering out 3 and 4 round bursts. Pretty soon, all the other police stop firing and are only looking at RoboCop. One by one, they lay their weapons down and gather up over RoboCop's shoulder. They have to see who is this shooter and what is this gun unlike anything they've ever seen.
This guy's really good.
He's not a guy, he's a machine.
What are they gonna do, replace us? Come on.
Thank you for your cooperation. Good night.
I'll buy that for $1.
Back in 1987, that kind of supremacy on the firing range was science fiction, but now it literally happens. Every time I pull out my 460, everybody down the firing line feels the shock of that mighty 460 going off. They just have to come see what it is. My buddy did the same thing. He has a 460 rolling on a Glock platform. And just for kicks, when he did the live fire test portion of his CCW exam, he loaded his magazine with 45 ACP, but with a couple of 460 Magnum cartridges down in the bottom of the mag. He wondered if anyone would notice. Well, not only did they notice, by the time he finished his mag and laid his pistol down, everyone was standing over his shoulder. They had to know what kind of incredible pistol he was shooting that was in a class all its own. Sometimes a Bible verse, one particular verse, just goes off with a bang like a 460 cartridge mixed into a standard pressure mag. And I want to share one such verse with you tonight. It's from 1 Corinthians. It comes from a chapter with a lot of good stuff, but then the apostle immediately, abruptly goes in a totally different direction. I guess I should start by reading it. 1 Corinthians 9 and 5. Have we not power to lead about a sister, a wife, as well as other apostles, and as the brethren of the Lord, and Cephas? Boom, boom, boom. Thunderstrike number one. Cephas, Peter, was married. How then could he be the first pope, as the Catholic Church has erroneously taught for centuries? They have this priest class which is set apart by their unbiblical command forbidding them to marry. Priests, all priests except a few of the Anglicans that they allow to rejoin back up with the Catholic Church. Priests are forbidden to marry, and the bishops more so, and of course the Bishop of Rome, the Pope, the Papa, the Catholic Church head, is supposed to be the head of celibacy. All those commands are unbiblical, and you wonder why the whole place is full of buggery. Well, this is why. They forbid people to marry. But Peter was married. We know this because of this verse and because of the event in the Gospels where Peter's mother-in-law, his swagger, his wife's mother, was sick, and Jesus went in and healed her, and she immediately got up and waited on the apostles. So, boom, 1 Corinthians 9:5 is a torpedo below the waterline for the unbiblical doctrine forbidding ministers to marry. Before that is another torpedo below the waterline of another Catholic doctrine, the supposed perpetual virginity of Mary. The Bible is clear that Jesus had sisters and brothers, because after the birth of the Lord Jesus, that patient man, Joseph, stepped up to the plate and hit that. Just not on the first heat, like Logan's going to do to Princess Eleanor. So when the Apostle Paul is talking about the rights of an apostle, and he names the other apostles, including the Lord's brothers, he says that they also were married. So here's
Peter was married, James was married, Jesus' other brother, the other apostle was married. But what is the central thrust of this verse? That Paul and every apostle has the right to take a wife even though he cannot provide for her a picket fence. He would have to lead her about in his ministry and his trials. In 2020, I took a little trip, just wanted my guns and ammunition and motor vehicles. When the Lord and the angels made the suggestion, hey, why don't you take this girl with you? It seems counterintuitive. It is against our American and English model that we've had for centuries, that after warriors win the war and survive, then they go home and build their white picket fence, and then they can take their bride. But that's not what my grandma did. She married Grandpa before he went off to war. She knew that he needed her with him, behind him, supporting him, loving him, helping him, even when there was no certain future, when there was no picket fence. Ironically, 20 years ago, when my prophetess was with me, we had everything. You know, she went with me through some dark valleys and hard times, but then the end of our faith was accomplished. We had new vehicles. We had a beautiful ranch. We had woods that we owned and ponds full of fish. We had frontage on Lake Eufaula where I could throw out a trot line to catch my breakfast. More often than not, the lake monster would come and rip the whole thing off and the tree with it. But that is another story. My point is that when did she come unglued? Not when we were in battle, not when times were tough, not when there was lack, not when we had to use our faith to survive. When she had the picket fence, when everything was in order, that's when her programming reactivated and she came totally unraveled and committed her violent and unforgivable treason against the Lord and against me. Not on a cloudy and a dark day, on a sunny day, on a very sunny season in both of our lives. As for these apostles, we know in hindsight that all of them were martyred. But for each and every one, whether their lot was to live or to die, whether their performance would win them a white picket fence in their old age or in the millennium, was immaterial. The apostle states right here that they have power to lead about a sister, a wife, to take her with them. They had a right, each and every one, no matter how gritty was their foxhole in the trenches of their warfare, to have a partner, a life partner, and a co-laborer in the person of a female ministry partner, in the person of a prophetess who walked in their apostolic walk with them, to lead about a sister, a wife. And you know what? I wouldn't have left mine in a million years.
I stood in the press pool for hours last night, some of it in the pouring rain, in order to attend President Nayib Bukele's, basically his State of the Union address, on the one-year anniversary of his inauguration for his second term. During that time, as I was curious why the Lord had me on my watch in intercession, Operation Spider Web was being executed against the Russian Federation by the Ukraine with a lot of Western help, including, Putin says, Elon Musk and Starlink. The flyover reports that 40 strategic bombers were left burning or destroyed. Hal Turner says at least two of those were Tu-22 Tupolev backfire supersonic strategic global bombers. These massive legacy bombers, just like their counterpart in the U.S. fleet, the B-1 Lancer, are quite irreplaceable. Even though they were constructed in the 1980s, they were constructed when the Soviet Union was strong and when the U.S. and Soviet economies were both surged in an arms race. It is simply not likely that either nation could recreate such aircraft without a full mobilization for a global war. Thus, their destruction is a bitter pill for Russia to swallow, both strategically and as pertains to morale and national pride. The Russian bear will surely answer this provocation with a predictable ferocity. Most disturbing is that this attack occurs while peace talks over the Ukraine issue are ongoing. They may thus be hampered or stalled by this event. The good news is that while the attack occurred, there was a party going on in El Salvador to celebrate the advances by Bukele's government, to mock his detractors and his haters in the world, especially the world press, which has just been comically critical of Bukele. There was an energy, there was an ecstasy in the air, there was an anticipation, and there was a hope that El Salvador could be a place where children could grow up separate from the corruption, separate from the crime, protected from the disaster that has plagued the whole world up until the present. This nation is proof that both crime and corruption can be defeated in a very short period of time if the people set their mind to it, and if they take up the sword.
Are you having any fun with our music from Asia? It's kind of crazy that during all this, there's been a land war, a drone war in Asia. Some of the attacks in the far east of Russia, in Siberia. None of Asia's hits were as cool as the heat of the moment. That's where romances die. That is where things are said and lances are thrown that cannot be recalled. And I guess that's what's happening in these days, in these gallant hours. I guess we're all dodging landmines. You know, I was on my lightweight motorcycle, and I was on the brakes going down a hill in a curve. So there's a lot of pressure on that front tire. It wasn't like I was running it at the limit or anything. But as I was turning and braking and coming down this hill, I spied a ripe yellow mango that had dropped directly into my path. It was imperative that I dodge it successfully. I suppose there are scientific metrics for lubricity, but in their vernacular, we have ideas about things that are slippery than others. Slippery when wet. Slippery as a banana peel. That's what all the cartoon characters slipped on when I was a kid. We say something was as slick as greased lightning or as slick as greased snot on a glass doorknob. Or my favorite, that something was slicker than goose shit through a tin horn. Avian excrement is of storied sliminess, especially if it comes from a fish-eating waterfowl. It's like the fish slime invades their innards along with all the omega-3s. Then once excreted on a smooth surface, it is a slippery indeed. But in recent days, as it is the season, I have experienced the full slipperiness of a mango. A ripe one when mangled or trodden or trampled or, God forbid, squashed under the tire of a braking motorcycle. I'll just say it's a dangerous place to be. Well, I slid that bullet. I got out of the way. I did not trample that particular mango. And I gotta say, I like being in a country where my little lightweight motorcycle, if I have a problem, I can get it fixed in any little shop on any corner for $5, $10, or $15. Not $500, $1,000, or $1,500. And on top of being marooned in the middle of nowhere and needing a specialty tow that's unavailable or unattainable, I would just like to remind the world that there are bright places. There are places where freedom is having a renaissance and a new birth. There are points of light. There are sparks of flame. There is a smoldering wick where liberty lives on, where the embers glow, where they are ready to burst into flame once again. We can rebuild our free world. I dare you to hope. And if you were to put feet to your faith like Grandma did so many years ago, I think the greatest way to do that is to marry and to bring forth a beautiful baby, that even a persecuted nomad may take himself a wife to lead about a sister a wife, as did Moses in the wilderness, after he rescued her and her sisters from some unruly shepherds. So we're going to wind down the night with one more Asia for the Peli Roja. Don't cry, hey! Now that I've found you, there is hope. There are reasons not to despair. Lift your head up. Take a look around you. God bless you. God bless Donald Trump. God bless Nayib Bukele and his lovely first family. God willing, I'll see you next week. Good night.
Circuit riding preacher used to ride across the land with a rifle on his saddle and a Bible in his hand. He told the prairie people all about the promised land as he went riding, singing down the trail.
This has been the Living by the Sword radio program with Pastor Samuel Honnold, gospelgunslingers.com.